Hello and welcome to the Columbus Metropolitan Club on WCBE. Learn more about CMC's weekly events, broadcast, membership, and sponsorship at our website, columbusmetroclub.org, where you can register to participate in the live stream of our weekly Wednesday noon forums. Today's CMC forum, Survival of the Arts, Now or Never, was recorded on February 3, 2021. Speaking are Executive Director of Ohio Citizens for the Arts, Angela Melica, Creative-in-Chief at Artfluential and co-founder of the Creative Control Fest, Marshall Shorts, CEO of Pro Musica Chamber Orchestra, Janet Chen, and our host, President and CEO of the Greater Columbus Arts Council, Tom Katzenmeier. Let's listen in.
The answer to the question posed in the title of the forum today, the answer to that question is now. It's not never. And we're going to get to the now part in a minute, but we're going to start at a very dark place. I'm going to tee us off with that because I have to tell you, because I can't swear at the Metropolitan Club, it is frigging awful out there for the arts right now. Who would have ever thought that everything had to close? All the revenue streams, whether they were public revenue streams, earned revenue streams at the arts organizations, were overnight dried up. It's just been a tough, tough period. We came off a record year in 2019. We were chugging along. Everything was great. And we got to March of 2020, and that's when we began to be held hostage by this virus. The performing arts, and Janet's going to talk about this, have been hit particularly hard. A couple of the larger institutions have been able to reopen. We'll talk about that in a minute. Professional artists face unemployment rates well above the national average. So just a very, very tough place. Just a couple examples. Ballet Met has lost more than $2 million in earned revenue because of this, because they haven't been able to sell tickets to things like the Nutcracker. COSAI remains closed. It's very unclear when COSAI is going to be able to reopen. Hopefully that'll happen sometime this summer. So that's the darkness of it, but I promise you that it's not going to end in the dark. We're going to end on a positive note here today. We have a lot of ground to cover in a very, very short period of time, so we're going to get started, and we're going to cover four areas. We're going to talk about what we've done, we're going to talk about what we see and what we need, and then we're going to talk about what's next and how we're feeling. And I am feeling a little bit better than awful, I will tell you that. So we're going to start with Angela Melica, who is the Executive Director of Ohio Citizens for the Arts, which is our statewide lobbying organization. And I have to tell you that she is basically single-handedly responsible for the arts organizations in Ohio getting $20 million in CARES Act funding through the governor and through the state legislature. Both other panelists here have actually benefited from that and have received CARES Act money from the state. So with that, I'm going to turn it over to you, Angela.
Thanks, Tom. I appreciate that. To set the stage, prior to the pandemic, arts and culture, creative economy in Ohio was a $41 billion industry. We rivaled the travel industry, the lodging industry. We employed nearly 300,000. In Columbus, that equals about $9 billion that we contributed to the Columbus economy, employing 60,000. And that's about $3 billion in wage income as well. Then COVID hit, and as Tom said, we came to a standstill. And to this point now, we've been the highest unemployed sector every month throughout this entire pandemic. Some misconceptions, our friends in the restaurant business suffering as well. We've had higher unemployment rates than them. As I often say, there's no carry out in the arts. Everything that these organizations have done to adjust to this, difficult time, they're putting content out to the community for free. And these organizations have made really difficult, prudent business decisions to survive. We've lost nearly a third of our jobs in the state, and these are high-skilled workers. These are people that dedicate thousands of hours to be where they are, to be at the chamber, to be, working in these iconic institutions that we rely on so much for a greater economic footprint. For every ticket that somebody purchases to an admission to a cultural event, they're spending on average $31 in the economy, whether it's parking or restaurants or retail. You know, they're generating income, and so we need these organizations in order to get Columbus back. And so it's just been, a devastating time. I think we have worked hard in changing perception that the arts aren't about feeling good. You know, that's been a long time way that we talk about the arts, that they're a feel-good, that the arts just show up for a handout. Given the devastation that we've faced, most of these, if not all of these organizations, have shifted their business model to really operate as business. That's why the devastation when we can't get bodies in these buildings, that earned revenue has gone to zero. They've been, you know, decimated. So we don't suffer from an arts crisis in Ohio. We suffer from a business crisis. Our business just happens to be in the creative industry.
Great. Thanks, Angela. Janet, let's go to you next. When we were getting ready for this, you talked about sort of having to start from square one. So let's go with that.
Yeah, I mean, very similar to what Angela described, you know, the days and the months and the weeks, you know, really have been a blur for this year. And I think the only way that I can cope with thinking about the now and the future is thinking about the phases of this pandemic. For us, the first phase was really triage. I think many other colleagues of mine would agree we were, you know, in the shock of the shutdown and in this mode where, you know, how do we continue our season? How do we pay our artists? How do we pay our musicians? How do we deal with our ticket buyers and our supporters who have invested in us in events that are still yet to come? Fortunately, as many others, we were the beneficiaries of a PPP loan for the first round, and that helped neutralize to a certain extent sort of that sense of triage for the first 3 months, 3-4 months. For us, I think we're now in what I describe as the second phase, and this phase has been the longest by far, and it's this tension of both waiting for things to reopen, waiting for the governor to determine what capacities are, you know, waiting for the guidelines, but at the same time, waiting yet this incredible urgency to create and find ways of how we as an arts community and artists can stay relevant in the lives of our supporters, and especially at a time when it is most needed. I would describe this time as almost analysis paralysis, you know, the number of scenarios that we have gone through to try and figure out financial modeling, artistic programming has been, really exhausting. But we've been really fortunate. Our organization at ProMusica, we've really decided that we need to create while we wait. And so very quickly when we realized in the fall that the fall being back in the theaters was probably impossible, we pivoted and put together a 2-week summer fest outdoors. We decided that even though we can't reach 5,000 as we typically do for our series at Franklin Park Conservatory, at least we could reach 700 over a 2-week period of time. And that has just been a wonderful evolution for us to try and think outside the box, learn as we go. We have just really looked at the resources, and everyone has had to adapt, from musicians having to social distance on stage. You play wearing masks. We have to get plexiglass. My favorite one is we have to find puppy pads to put on the floor to capture the spit of our brass players. And never in my life did I think I would have to go buy tons of puppy pads and black puppy pads because it, you know, looks better on the floor. So these experiences, I think, will only help us continue to get through this time.
Thanks, Janet. And Marshall, I know the organizations that you're involved with have also had to cancel events. You've had to pivot to other things, activate in other ways. Can you talk about that a little bit for us?
Yeah. So I'm here representing in a number of facets as an entrepreneur, but also just in community work. And an adjustment had to be made, of course, due to COVID, primarily, you know, because of the safety of the community that we typically engage with. But It wasn't doom and gloom for us in a traditional sense, because art for at least, you know, the organizations I work with, Creative Control Fest, Maroon Arts Group, like, art is always tethered to work and activism. And so this moment called for that. But art as a business, you know, has exposed a lot of the fragility of the arts sector. And, you know, we weren't untouched from that as well. We did receive CARES Act money, and through that work, we were able to host an internship where we were able to engage youth this summer. But we are also able to use our Box Park to kind of be a safe space for activists and protesters to kind of come and convene, learn, and safely distance. So we've had to kind of adjust some of our programming, but we've always sort of been a lean organization all across the board. In terms of Maroon Arts Group, we've had to, you know, be creative in how we fund things anyway. And so that didn't stop, you know what I mean? And I won't say we're kind of used to being in that position or used to being in this position, but it really was like a continuation of the work. So our approach has been like, how do we continue the work of being a convener and a conductor and a producer of the arts for our community? And we were able to activate our space, our land, and then be a space for particularly Black artists in the city, in the Black community in general. And so we've been fortunate in that regard to continue that work. But I also think, you know, moving forward, as we have this conversation about how the arts are supported, this kind of, you know, shows where we kind of land in that spectrum. And before the pre-pandemic, you know, we were lean. We had to keep our overhead low because of lack of access to resources. So what we've been able to do with a little bit has continued throughout the pandemic, the multiple pandemics that are happening at this moment. So
thanks, Marshall. And from a GCAC perspective, I would tell everyone, obviously, we've been in the same boat. We probably saw $8 million of revenue basically evaporate before our eyes. That would have been money coming from the hotel motel bed tax and from the newly put in place ticket fee. So that is money that would have actually gone right out into the community to arts organizations and artists and to support projects. That money was gone. What saved us, I would have to tell you, and I think this is probably true for these folks too, we all applied for PPP money. We all got PPP money. We've now applied for the second round. I hope you all have too. So our application is in for that. We also got CARES Act money from the city of Columbus. It was $1.558 million. Franklin Park Conservatory, Kappa, and COSI also got CARES Act money directly from City Council. There is venue money coming, again, from the federal government, from the SBA, so that'll benefit Kappa, that'll benefit the Gateway Film Center. They're poised to apply for that money. But because of the public support and the tremendous support we have from Mayor Ginther, all seven members of City Council, led by Shannon Harden, and the county commissioners, we were led by Kevin Boyce now, we were able to basically get to a budget for the end of 2020 that was slightly in the black, when it would have been probably $1.5 million to the negative. So the public money coming into this, CARES Act, PPP, wherever it's coming from, really made the difference and helped everyone get through this. Now, that will largely not be there in 2021, so we're a little bit nervous. And I think we all view this, we're in a recovery mode now. That the beginning of it is kind of Janet's saying, in terms of the phases that she's in. And it's probably going to be a couple years of this, because we have to have conventions back, we have to have large events back. And none of that's happening in the first part of this year, but you'll begin to see it in the fall season, I believe. So let's talk about how we're looking at the next couple months. I know, Angela, the governor introduced his budget on Monday, and now you're going to be getting to work on that, advocating for the Ohio Arts council budget. We all benefit from that also. So it'll be great to have that in place. That's a six-month process here. Is there any comment you want to give us on that?
Well, I think both, you know, Janet and Marshall touched on how this, what we've gone through has really brought to the surface something that we've known all along and we talk about, especially those in the arts world, is about funding. And how do we figure out how we solve this funding predicament where every year it seems like we have to knock on the same doors and pound the same pavement. And what, you know, my goal is to use this once-in-a-lifetime episode to really reimagine how do we fund the creative economy in Ohio. You know, if you look at the state of Minnesota, they have a tax that they dedicate for parks and lakes and culture. Utah is looking at the same thing, Washington State. You know, the creative industry in Ohio rivals California and Texas in the vast amounts of art institutions and organizations that we have. The rich history of the arts and culture in Ohio is amazing. Karamu House Theater in Cleveland is the oldest African-American theater in the country. Children's Theater of Cincinnati is the longest-running children's theater in the country, over 100 years. You know, we have stories here, you know, in Columbus as well. And so how, you know, I look at how do we not only survive, but thrive coming out of this. So my view right now is we're not in recovery mode yet. You know, when I look at Kappa laying off 45% of their staff and what they will need as far as revenue to come back, you know, they're going to have to bring staff back 3 to 4 months prior to getting butts in seats, if you will, for a production at a, is it going to be a limited capacity or they need 100% capacity to get in their theater to break even. You know, Broadway's not going to cut their production costs by 30% where, you know, the theater capacity is maybe at 30%. So we have to look at what do we need to do to not only help stabilize through this year. We're predicting that this year will probably be more challenging than last. Because of now having to look at, you know, when Kappa went from a $20 million budget, they're operating at a $6 million budget now. How do you build that back to get to that capacity? The museum laid off 30% of their staff. You know, if we look at, if we took our industry and looked at it as we look at a sporting industry, you know, if the crew had to cut 45% or the Blue Jackets, you know, there would be a lot of noise about that. We have to view this industry very similar. And so, yes, we look at the budget, but we also look at the federal. So I do work with people at the federal level. And we also now look at ways of reimagining more dedicated funding for the creative economy in Ohio.
Great. Thanks. And Marshall, talk a little bit about how you're viewing the next couple months, and I want to make sure you comment on the murals that are coming once the weather breaks and it's not minus 14 outside.
Yeah, I view the next couple of months. You're talking about Deliver Black Dreams, which is a campaign we kind of started in response to well, it kind of started around the election and activating black voters. But in Columbus, we used the vehicle of art to kind of further that message that art should be in the conversation around policy, in the conversation around social change. Art is often leading the conversation, but we often kind of bring it in on the back end as if to dress it up. But art is often foreshadowing what's to come. And if we look at it as that, then it plays a much larger role in how we see change and seek change in our cities, whether that be economically or whether that be for social change. And so, you know, in that regard, you know, we are looking to use art as a vehicle to push, challenge, agitate in the city for social change in policy, in the way that, in which arts funding is distributed for underserved communities. And so I'm really excited about that work. We hope to erect about 6 to 7 murals in the city under this theme, and engage Black artists, pay Black artists, but also build institution around some of the organizations that do this work, not just Maroon Arts Group, but, you know, Streetlight Guild and a number of other organizations that are still small that are trying to scale to the extent of some of the organizations that we talk about, because there is a need for that within the culture. And so, it's hard work. It is work. Not paid work but, you know, when we see wins and when we see things changing, there's a direct connection to what we create. And the role that art plays in that. And so in that regard, it's essential. And I know we'll talk about that a little later in the program. But, you can support that work. You can donate to that work so we can continue to build that. But that art will be connected to other programming that tethers to this art in education, in healthcare, and policy and things like that, and even policing and how we're policed. So, yeah.
Janet, tell us how you're viewing the next near term here, summer, fall.
Right. Yeah. No, I mean, this is a very interesting time. I also don't think we're quite at recovery yet, but there is a little light at the end of the tunnel. We now have a vaccine. And so that's positive. But at the same time, we also do not know yet when audiences are ready to come back to the theater. Recent studies have shown probably not till the fall is when we'll see some sense of return to what we were familiar with and where the comfort level was. But I think these next few months, what we'll see and what ProMusica in particular is planning to do is take all that we have done in the last, 10 months. We did do some live performances in November, limited capacity in a new venue that we established a new partnership for this year with the Fives. But now we're going to not have live audiences and do it digitally. And I think many, many, not only in Columbus, but across the country have really invested as much as possible in the capabilities of technology in the digital platform. And if we look for a silver lining, there is great benefit to that will carry us through beyond the pandemic. The ability to explore the technological platforms like CMC is done, I think will reap rewards when a time pre-pandemic we were just, kind of producing. So I do think that the next, 4 or 5 months we'll see continued perseverance to continue to create and do it within these different channels that we've all discovered and taken risks during this time.
It's probably made the arts accessible to new audiences, too, which is
absolutely
helpful.
Absolutely. Yeah.
But there is no substitute for live performance, that's for sure.
There is no substitute. Yeah. I mean, I loved Angela's analogy of the sports, example. For musicians, just like a football team, the longer you don't practice, train together, the harder it is to come back from that. And that is no different from the arts, whether you're a dancer, actor, musician. The longer you are void of developing your craft, the harder it is to get out of this. And so for us and many in particular, we have not wanted to succumb to hibernation. We've been very proactive about ensuring that the artists still have that ability to exercise their craft.
You're listening to the Columbus Metropolitan Club Forum, Survival of the Arts, Now or Never. Speaking are Executive Director of Ohio Citizens for the Arts, Angela Melica, Creative-in-Chief at Artfluential and co-founder of the Creative Control Fest, Marshall Shorts, CEO of ProMusica Chamber Orchestra, Janet Chen, and our host, President and CEO of the Greater Columbus Arts Council, Tom Katzenmeyer, on WCBE 90.5 FM Columbus, 106.3 FM Newark, streaming online at WCBE.org, a broadcast service of Columbus City Schools. We'll return to the conversation after a short break.
On the Music Journeys podcast, artists share the inspiration behind their latest release and what music means to them. Mojo Flow's Amber Nicole processes everything through music.
Music is a constant teacher for me. In kind of whatever phase of my life I'm in, for instance, I listen, like just sit and listen. That's kind of what I've needed right now anyways, is just pausing. Giving yourself time to just listen and not be doing something else.
Find this and other episodes of Music Journeys at WCBE.org.
Hi, this is Weekday Morning Music host Mike Taylor. Some of the new music I'm playing this month include songs from the new release from Jimbo Mathis and Andrew Bird coming out next month, and also music from Ringo Starr's new one, also coming out next month. Parades at Mardi Gras have been banned this year, but you'll still be able to hear some Zydeco music. Weekdays at about 9:15 a.m. after the morning news here on 90.5 FM WCBE Columbus, 106.3 FM Newark, online at WCBE.org, and on Apple Music.
Welcome back to the Columbus Metropolitan Club Forum, Survival of the Arts, Now or Never. Let's get back to the conversation.
From our perspective, we're going to have to make a decision soon about whether or not we can have an arts festival. And we had to cancel it this year. And actually, ProMusica was going to be our opening act in 2020, performing with Aaron Deal. Right. Columbus's own Aaron Deal. It was going to be a great show that we were going to do at Bicentennial Park there. The festival season is significant. This is the next inflection point for the arts in Columbus. The festival season runs from basically Memorial Day weekend to after Labor Day, and it includes the Asian Festival, the Memorial Tournament, the Arts Festival, Pride, ComFest, Festival Latino, Jazz Ribs, and it does bring about 2 million people downtown. So we're on the cusp of that, and we would never do anything that would be unsafe for the city or cause public health concerns. That's the bottom line for everybody here today. But we have to decide this pretty soon, probably within a month or 45 days. Last year we called it, I think it was the first week of April, so 60 days out. This year it's June 11th, 12th, and 13th, Friday, Saturday, and Sunday. The other thing that's important, the next inflection point after that, is the fall arts season. So again, another very critical time for people like Janet, Kappa, Chad Whittington, Broadway series, big tickets, getting ticket fee money from that. It is significant. So keep your eyes on these decisions. It's hard right now, but the vaccine is flowing. And it's flowing faster with each passing day. The news today was they're not expecting herd immunity until August, which isn't exactly helpful for summer events. But so we'll see where we get on that. That'll have a tremendous impact on the psyche of Columbus. I know Experience Columbus really is wanting to get people back out and traveling to Columbus again. So those are the next two inflection points. The other thing I would tell you is, because of the public support that we get from the county and the city, we are going to be able to fund all these organizations to the degree that we did last year. That's not anywhere near where we thought we were going to be with the fully loaded ticket fee in place, but it'll help to keep them going. So we are committed to doing that, even if we have to dip into our own reserves to do that. So we have about five more minutes here or so before we go to questions. So we're going to end, I promised you we would end on a positive note. So here's the positive note. Some of you might have seen this. Dr. Melanie Korn, who's the president of Columbus College of Art and Design, had a letter to the editor in the Dispatch on Saturday comparing what happened after the Spanish flu in 1918 to what could happen after this is over. And there's a lot of parallels there and what it's going to look like when we reemerge. And here's what it says. Historians argue that an eagerness to return to a communal social life after years of staying indoors contributed to the flourishing art scenes and cultural revolutions of jazz, Art Deco, Surrealism, the Harlem Renaissance, and other important movements. So she's asking the community this question. Now that our exercise / guitar learning / closet cleaning resolutions are all locked down, I hope you'll ponder this question. How can I and how can we as a community not only hope for new cultural renaissance, but actively manifest it? So a couple of us have touched on that already, but I want to throw that out to you guys, and then we're going to go to Q&A.
Who wants to start? Do you want me to? Well, I want to say one thing is, you know, that I haven't touched on, which is advocacy works. You know, advocacy is what I spend every hour of every day thinking about. How can we continue to engage, energize, inform on levels that we've never done before? One thing that I think that I'm most proud of is seeing this industry in Ohio come together like never before. It no longer is it just Central Ohio, and then you've got Cleveland and Cincinnati. These leaders are coming together regularly, having conversations about best practices, talking about collaborating, talking about launching new programming within Ohio. And so that's something that's really exciting for me. Having the recognition from the DeWine administration, singling out the arts industry with the $20 million CARES funding, you know, that was the second largest amount dedicated for arts in the country. And so to have the administration listen and understand the vibrancy of this industry, how we are vital to the economy, that's a really hopeful thing as we go forward. And legislative leaders as well have really, really listened and understood. They knew that the $20 million wasn't going to be enough and said, you know, we'll do what we can in the future. And so we continue to have those ongoing conversations. So that's really hopeful. We don't stop that work, you know, and we all work together as one in order to accomplish those kinds of things.
Yeah, I would add on that, you know, in this pandemic, we've talked about how the arts is, you know, therapeutic, it's creative, it's resilient and essential. But we were that before the pandemic. We are essential. We have been resilient. We continue to create. And as Angela said, this has now been lifted on a platform where, you know, we need more public support to survive, not just now, but for the long view. Things are messy and chaotic right now, and I think we have to tell ourselves that's okay. We are only human. But at the same time, you know, let's remember that at the end of the day, when we come out of this traumatic experience, whether it's the virus or suffering from inequities and, you know, the racism in this community, arts is there to help us through that. And so we are incredibly essential. And I hope that the community and really, you know, the world recognizes that we are the social relief that will be there when we get out of this.
Yeah, a lot to say. I was telling you on the way in, panels are too short. Art as a function of culture will always survive. As long as people have a need to communicate, to connect, and to be in community, the arts play a role in how we do that. I think the challenges that the creative economy has is something we'll have to grapple with forward. You know, I think about that $41 billion or that $9 billion in creative economy and how many like artists of color are left out of that. So I hope that we will grapple with how we move forward and we rebuild this creative economy in a way that is inclusive of all people and all types of organizations so that they can grow. If we look at art as a function in culture, art does at least three things. It creates community, it brings out our humanity, and it's an economic driver. So if we're thinking about it in that regard, it is essential. I'm not naive to think that it is essentially like taking the place of like safety and health and food. There's no need to even talk about arts and culture if those things aren't taken care of. But if we consider what art does and the role it plays in culture and economy and those things and who is at the root of that, which are the artists, then we have to kind of grapple with what that looks like moving forward. And I think, you know, there's some positive things that we can point to as we grapple with these challenges.
So I want to, we have a couple more minutes before questions. Talk about, people are always ask me, well, like, what can I be doing right now? So I'll start with that. First of all, there is a lot that you can go do still. Some things have reopened, socially distanced. You got to wear a mask. You got to buy a time ticket. So notably, the Art Museum, Columbus Museum of Art, has a spectacular Amina Robinson exhibit that will be there until October. Franklin Park Conservatory closed for a couple months in the summer, but then reopened and has been open through this whole period of time. They've been getting some great attendance, great revenue there. There's a lot happening in film and in film advocacy, and starting Friday, you're going to be able to, if you go to the Wexner Center website, you'll be able to watch the three films that won Art Unite CBUS Prize. Three local black filmmakers. Marshall and I got to watch them together on Saturday afternoon. Beyond spectacular. Just beyond spectacular. The quality of the work. Three short films that come from the time period after George Floyd was murdered. From the unrest that happened in the streets. So you got to see them. They were shown as part of the Sundance Film Festival, which Angela and I went to. 11 Sundance films were shown here in Columbus. Again, limited audience, that type of thing. The symphonies performing, the Ballet Met dancers are back practicing and teaching. Katko, Short North Stage, doing great creative stuff online, creative content online. There's an incredible new public art installation at Broad and Cleveland. You got to go see it. It's just remarkable. Luann Crane and the Crane family paid for that. It's at the Social Justice Park. And then tomorrow I am going to put a blog out urging people to give to the arts. It doesn't have to be my organization, but it's buy tickets, give to the arts, participate. That's what we need right now. We need to get revenue going again at all these events. So I don't know whether anyone else would like to add.
After George Floyd, Columbus is dealing with its own crisis with police, and that fight continues around Casey Goodson and Andre Hill and many others who have lost their lives at the hand of police. So we should definitely, you know that art is continuing to function and bring out that work as well.
All right. Well, we have a lot of questions, so I'm going to go through them as quickly as possible, okay. And perhaps you could make your answers concise as well.
Okay.
First of all, Bruce Garfield from Columbus Music Commission wants to shout out to say what a great job you guys are doing and to thank you. So thank you, Bruce. You're doing a great job, too. Lane Eagle, Momentum, the survival of the arts is imperative not just for adults, but especially for children who are served by arts educational programs. What can be done to ensure arts education for children is regarded as essential?
Do you want to go with that, Jen? You're in that
so
area.
Glad. Yeah, Leanne, thank you for bringing that up, because if we had more time, we absolutely, you know, want to highlight that there's been incredible impact on, you know, our outreach and education for students. We have to recognize that there are teachers, instructors, musicians who are doing all they can to continue to bring arts experiences to these kids during this time. For us, as an example, we've pivoted and provided violins to our Play Us Forward students who have no access to music experiences, and doing one-on-one buddy lessons. I mean, that's just a very tiny example, but I absolutely think we need to recognize the longer this goes on, the more devastating and difficult it will be to bring those opportunities back.
The other thing I'd add is, as part of Marshall's Deliver Black Dreams program, there's going to be a partnership with students at Fort Hays who will be able to pair off with an artist that'll start this fall and learn from the artists that are doing the murals and doing that work in the community.
One thing I'll add is we're working currently on programming that we've not focused on in the past from an advocacy or lobbying effort, which will include arts education and support for early learning. That's something that is the governor's project is education and especially early learning. And so we'll be collaborating with different organizations around the state to host webinars in helping train arts educators how to be better advocates for themselves, as well as we will be advocating to state leaders on that topic.
This question is from Java Kittrick from Puffin Foundation West. Java always challenges us and supports us. Why didn't the arts community speak up when the Christopher Columbus statue was removed, since it was a gift from the Italian community and with Christopher Columbus having a Jewish heritage? She wants to know why the arts community wasn't involved with that decision.
At Columbus State, that was a decision of the Board of Trustees and the President of Columbus State. We were not involved or apprised of that. And the one that was in front of City Hall, that was a decision that the mayor made.
Laura McDonald from the Benefactor Group, what role does philanthropy play in making the arts more resilient? What's the case for supporting arts and culture when so many have urgent needs due to food and housing insecurity, racial injustice, et cetera? And she admits that this is a softball question, that our community can and should do both. We needn't put one against the other.
So you were talking, Janet, earlier about the arts being essential. That was a word that we used when we were prepping for this, and you can completely make a case for that.
Right, absolutely. I mean, if we're so grateful for the generosity of the community supporters, donors who have donated their tickets back when they didn't need to. You know, every little nuance like that matters and counts. And I think that organizations in particular have really tried to figure out how do we stay connected to our audiences and build relationships at a time when traditionally the things that we do aren't allowed. And we're all trying to, you know, determine how we engage so that when we come out of this, the donors will, you know, still be there for us. But, you know, I think all I can say is that this community has been incredibly generous, recognizing that artists create art, but this is their profession. They have to make a living, just like anyone else. And I just wanted to point out one thing that I think often gets overlooked, which is independent contractors in particular and freelancers who work in the gig economy. So the musician who plays in different places, you know, they have suffered a lot. And so to continue to kind of galvanize support around that is incredibly important.
And I'll just add, I mean, our sector, again, is the highest unemployed sector in Ohio. We've lost nearly a third of our jobs. So those are real jobs. And so, you know, I was asked by a reporter one time, how can you be advocating for funding for the arts when there are people standing in line at a food bank? And I said, well, I can't imagine how many of our people are in that line at the food bank. You know, these are real jobs that are gone, that they can't shift and go down the street and work at the next ballet or the next museum. So, you know, they're leaving this industry. Will we get them back? We don't know, but that's our sector that's suffering. And so when you're supporting the arts and culture industry, you're supporting jobs and businesses.
So I appreciate Laura's question. Just a couple other things to add. So when the artists were all basically thrown out of work in March, we started an emergency fund for artists. We got 80 to 90 new gifts from that, from people that had never given us money before. So the community really stepped up. When we had to cancel the arts festival, all the sponsors, 90% of the sponsors let us keep that money because they knew we would have expenses and other things. So again and again through this, and I'm sure Janet Marshall, you've experienced this new money that's come in from unexpected places. And again, that's why I'm putting out this blog, urging people to give. Now's a good time to give to these organizations as we, you know, as we begin the recovery process here.
There is abundance out there. Like, you know, there are companies that are making money hand over fist. So we're dealing with another crisis of resource and who has access to that resource. And so I think we got to start pivoting the question as to how do we pull some of that resource back so that people aren't losing jobs and then we don't have a crisis over food and safety and those things. And that's what a lot of the unrest has been about, is that there is resource. There are people who are doing quite well during this moment. And I'll just respond to the first question. I think the artist community did speak up, and a lot of that was in critique of the Christopher Columbus monuments and statues. And so I won't go into detail, but I will say I think the artist community did speak up, and I think that in part is why some of those pieces were removed, and in response to art that could replace it.
This question's from Mike Thompson, and I'm assuming it's Mike Thompson from WSU. Mm-hmm. Instead of canceling the arts festival, why not downsize and spread it out?
So we actually are thinking about that. So it's a good question, Mike. There's a lot of different things. You could, last year, we obviously moved it online. I don't think we want to do that again this year. People are getting weary of all the stuff that's online right now. But we're thinking about that. We're thinking about what could we do to adjust it, either controlling the size of the crowd, making people wear a mask, showing proof of vaccination. We're not quite there yet on the, you know, scale down the number of artists exhibiting, don't have live performances if that's the issue, give out beer in cans instead of in open cups. But we have to think about all those kinds of things, and I know everyone else is too. But it's a good question. Could we move it into a couple neighborhoods instead and keep it very small, germane to those parts of the city? So all of that will absolutely be looked at.
Great, great ideas. Derek Gill, I think you addressed this a little bit, Tom, but maybe expand on it. How will support go directly to individuals in the visual arts?
Yes. So Derek is a visual artist who has a piece on display at the Columbus Museum of Art, which you must see. It's a device. I don't know how to describe it. It's an electronic device that lights up and makes noises. It's quite spectacular. You might have seen in social media that somebody actually proposed in front of it. I don't know whether you saw it or not, but somebody got down on their knee and proposed to their future wife in front of it. Derek was trying to track that down. We have a program called Support for Professional Artists. We're actually reviewing applications for that right now. An artist can get $1,000 from us once a year, every year. We had to cut that number back a little bit. Last year was a little bit higher than that, but and then we'll do it again later in the year. So there absolutely is. We are one of the few organizations that an artist can come to for supplies, help on marketing, development of a website, whatever they need. It's an easy application, and we process them very quickly. Those first round of checks will be going out probably in the next couple of weeks, sometime before the end of February.
Kathy Fox, Angela and the Ohio Citizens for the Arts did incredible work to obtain state pandemic relief funding for the arts. Could the arts get additional funds from the $2.8 billion state rainy day fund in the near future?
Well, I think, you know, the governor's announcement on Monday with the budget where he is hoping to allocate $1 billion to special one-time relief, we are looking at that funding and getting a portion. There's $50 million that I believe you set aside for entertainment and indoor venue, culture venues. Certainly that's going to have to go through the legislative process. So we've already huddled, you know, our team to talk about, you know, what we identify, what the need is. We certainly know there's a need. And so we are hopeful that there will be meaningful dollars that we will get, again, dedicated for this relief funding.
This is from Trip Lazarus. How can we use the crises to come out stronger on the other side? Yes, nothing compares to live audiences, but via digital platforms, we can reach huge numbers that can't otherwise attend.
I think we all kind of touched a little bit upon that, which this time has, again, allowed many of us to explore avenues of presenting, producing creative art in ways that either we didn't know existed or we just didn't have the time or resources to do that. And, you know, one thing that I ask myself a lot is, you know, the risks and the investments that we're taking now to navigate this time that is not what we would typically do. Are we looking at that as a 4-month thing or really an 18-plus month thing that becomes ingrained in, you know, our DNA in the sector? So I think all of those factors is going to help us be a stronger, you know, cultural community because of that. And a lot of collaborations, I think, are still happening despite the fact that we have to stay apart. There's great thinking around how we can stay collaborative.
Emily Prieto, how can arts and humanities organizations work more closely together?
I just had a conversation yesterday with the chair of Ohio Humanities Board. We have begun those conversations. We started them last fall. And as they look for a new executive director, they are looking for ways that we can work together. And I really think that that's going to be a key part of this future dedicated funding, this reimagined dedicated funding for the arts. I think it's arts, humanities, zoos, parks. I mean, we don't know, we're looking at what other states have done. We're talking with these other organizations. I am a firm believer in collaboration breeds success. We're seeing that within our own industry and coming together. And so we are reaching across the state to those organizations and having those conversations.
Sandy Pritz, could you discuss the renovations going on at the Ohio Theater?
Sure. So there was a great article in the paper about that today. Kappa had money from the state capital bill for this. It was something they had put on hold. Obviously, there's a period of time now to take advantage of where there won't be anybody in there. And it sounds like they're largely renovating the balcony area, putting in new carpeting, railings. If you've been to the balcony up there, you know that it would be helpful to have railings up there. So things that they've been wanting to get done, and it's a good thing. Yeah.
From the state that it, for the purpose is for infrastructure.
Yeah.
And so those monies have to be used for that type of work.
Can I add one quick thing, very quick? I think when we look back on this time, 20, 30, 50 years from now, what art is being created now that we will reflect on or that will be part of our genres? Or, you know, I think that's something we won't know, but that's an exciting thing to think about, what we're creating now, how that contributes to our future.
And I have a question to pose to the audience, and we discussed this before, is like a quintessential question we can ask is what happens to our cities, to our communities, if art is not there? And that's something we can ponder on for a long time to come and maybe work backwards from there to see what this looks like.
That concludes today's show. You've been listening to the Columbus Metropolitan Club Forum, Survival of the Arts, Now or Never, recorded on February 3rd, 2021. Speaking were Executive Director of Ohio Citizens for the Arts, Angela Melica, Creative-in-Chief at Artfluential and co-founder of the Creative Control Fest, Marshall Shorts, CEO of Pro Musica Chamber Orchestra, Janet Chen, and our host, President and CEO of the Greater Columbus Arts Council, Tom Katzenmeier. More information about today's speakers, this and other forums, membership in the Columbus Metropolitan Club, and our weekly noon Wednesday live stream events is available on our website at columbusmetroclub.org, where you can register to participate in the live stream. The Columbus Metropolitan Club, connecting people and ideas through community conversation. Thanks for listening.